Round of applause, please. Liz works for the Diocese of Canterbury, just in case you were wondering. Okay, Diocese of Canterbury. She is our Diocesan Stewardship and Funding Advisor. And she has a message for us all this morning. So without further ado, I'm going to hand over to her.
Well, thank you very much, everybody, for inviting me to come here this morning to talk to you about money. Because that's what we really love to hear about, don't we? Actually, my job title is Stewardship and Funding Advisor. It's stewardship and funding because it's two separate things. Funding is what churches do when the tower's falling down or they want to put in a loo. Stewardship is something quite different. It's a recognition that everything we have comes from God. It is our money, but it's our families, it's our friends, it's the world around us. It's all those wonderful gifts and skills and talents that all come from God. And part of being a disciple, that word's sounding funny.
I'll take it down.
Part of what being a disciple is recognizing all of these gifts, nurturing them, making the most of them, and then saying, well, thank you, God. I'd like to give something back to you now. So that's why we're stewardshipping, and not funding this morning. I've been asked to come and talk about money, because we need some. But whatever I say, remember the money is only a small bit of it. The money is what enables the mission of the church here in this village and the ministry that that mission supports. So, oh no, it does work. There we are. Let's talk about family. Because we are church family. And church family is like a family. Family at home family. A church family does things together, talks to one another. Church families, like our families at home, have fallings out and makings up and are noisy and don't listen to one another some of the time, and some of the times does listen to one another. So I put a few words up here so we can see what they're like. And you can see we've got our family behind. We've got our Junction church family. We've got our St. Peter's church family. But because you're all really one big family, that's where you all are. So church families pray together. It's our way of talking to God. It's our way of talking with one another. And if you think about our family at home, we talk to one another. We communicate with one another. It's really important, because if we don't, we get in a bit of a mess. All sorts of misunderstandings can arise, and then we'll get a falling out. But communicating, talking to one another, in the context of our church family, praying together, is part of what makes us family. And families do things together. I put worship up there because for churches that's the obvious thing. But there's a whole lot of other stuff that you do together. Not least, eat bacon butties. What a church this is. Families at home do things together too. And it may be eating bacon butties. It may be going to the cinema. It may be doing the washing up. But we talk together. We do things together. We worship God together. And it's a sign that we're actually committed. We care for one another. Our family is really important to us. So we talk, we do stuff, we care. And it's usually then the next one comes along that we give. We give enormously, generously, in all sorts of ways to one another. Not just of our money, but everything else as well. Can anybody tell me something that some member of your family at home has done for you that you really appreciated just recently? Shout out at anyone? Okay, I'll start. Sorry, go on.
Oh, okay, I've got a new puppy, and my husband got up at 5 o'clock in the morning to do the wee.
I've got a son who trained as a carpenter. He doesn't actually work as a carpenter anymore, but if I need anything doing around the house, he doesn't even go, oh, doesn't even do tradesmen at me. Anything else that our families do for us? Okay, you get the gist. And if we're like families in church, we're probably like families at home, and we take one another for granted. And there's something rather important that we often forget. Thank you. Thank you for everything you do here at Junction. It's noticed, it's appreciated. Somebody has put all those cords and cables together to enable you to hear me. Well, thank you. That's brilliant. Somebody's made bacon butties. Thank you. It's part of what makes us family that we appreciate one another. And thank you. So back to church, back to Junction, back to money. I've been asked to focus particularly on money this morning, but remember, it's about much more than money. It's our families, it's our friends, it's the world around us, it's our gifts and our skills and our time and our talents. But the money is actually needed, because it costs a lot to run this parish, and these figures are Junction and St. Peter's together. Huge amount, that's every month. But what I do need to say is that it shows that there's life here. If it didn't cost anything to run this parish, it's probably a sign that there ain't no life here at all. So that's what it costs to run this parish. This is where we spend it. There's the cost of services, there's some admin, there's church running costs, there's parish share, which I'll explain more about in a moment, there's charitable giving outside. It's the parish share, which is the big, big, big lot of money that you give to the diocese every month that enables the diocese to run. And for most of our churches, it's their biggest single expense. For all of our churches, it's their biggest single expense. But it's really important. 80% of the diocesan income comes from parish share. So here's what it pays for. The big pink one, and it doesn't matter if you can't see all the figures in general, the big pink one is our ministry costs. It's the cost of our vicars and their stipends and their housing and their national insurance and all the rest of it. The next biggest one is training new ministers for the future. Half of our clergy are due to retire in the next 5 or 10 years, and they need replacing. If we had to fund a curate and the training of that new priest all of ourselves, we wouldn't have any because nobody could afford them. So that's why that cost gets spread right across the diocese and everybody puts in a little bit. In the case of this church, we've got Stephen Sibia. So at the moment, you benefit from that, and you benefit from his ministry. And that
we also, diocese also paying for Mark's training.
Ah.
Mark is not here. But he's been leading this church for the last 7 years, but they've been paying for his training as well.
Absolutely. So you're getting a double good dose. But of course then that training, that sending out that you're doing, benefits the whole of God's church. It's not just here, but wherever these people that you have grown, that you have nurtured, take with them wherever they go in their ministry. Of the other smaller pieces of pie, the next biggest one, surprising me, is safeguarding. Safeguarding is important. Safeguarding protects our children and our vulnerable people from harm. And it costs a lot. And in the past, the Church of England, along with the Catholic Church and all sorts of other institutions, haven't done a very good job of it. And a great deal of harm has been caused. And part of that is putting right those wrongs of the past. Of the other little bits, there's some finance and admin costs, schools, children and young people, support for mission and ministry, communities and outreach, and the smallest piece of pie is our, what we call our senior clergy, our archdeacons and our bishop and their offices. I've gone on about that in quite a lot of detail, because I know it's a lot of money. But I hope you can see that it all does come back in one way or another. And lots of things that you'd have to do anyway and have to pay for anyway can be done much more efficiently coming from the centre, and we all share that. So it costs a lot to run the church. That's where your parish share goes. This is what's coming in. There's planned giving, there's cash collections, there's gift aid, there's fundraising, and there's fees for weddings and funerals, which mostly, I suspect, come from the other end. You're going to see there that there's a shortfall. But I'm not going to labour that point, because I'm here today not to say, give us all your money. I'm here today to try and encourage us to think about God and God's generosity. So instead, let's think about our own money and what we spend money on. And there's a few examples up there. We might go on holiday. We might get a haircut. We might have a meal out in a restaurant. I've put up the popcorn because that's the cinema one. I live in Faversham. And in Faversham, we've got this cinema, which is a real old-fashioned one. It's big. It hasn't been divided up. It's a listed building. But it's got big swishy curtains, and it's got teenagers in peaked caps who collect your tickets from you. And it's only £5 to get in, and the popcorn's really cheap. So we go to the cinema a lot more than we might otherwise, because actually it doesn't cost a lot. Whereas I know for some people that would be an issue. But even in some of our most deprived areas, people will go, oh, I'll buy a bar of chocolate and not think too much about it. And there's a reason I want you to think about this. I want you to think about what's important. What are our priorities? Billy Graham described a checkbook, that dates it, as a theological document. Because there's absolutely nothing which demonstrates our priorities more than where we spend our money. So let's think about priorities. Not just with our money, but with our time, our gifts and skills. We juggle. We all juggle, don't we? We all have balls in the air all over the place. Now, I tried juggling at one point, and I was absolutely hopeless at it. But when you're juggling and you go to drop a ball, which one are you going to drop? Is it going to be the God ball? Or is it going to be a second go at the cinema ball? Or an extra helping at the Calvary ball? Because I think that for me, God is important. In Him, I live and move and have my being. God has been so generous to me. There have been times in my life when things have been really, really tough, really hard. And I've gone, oh God, give me strength. And actually, I sort of meant it. And you know, God did. God gave me strength when I needed it. God gave me calm when I needed it. So for me, that God ball is a really important one, and that's the one I'm going to catch on to first. So think about it. How important is God to you? How is God a priority in your life? So let's think then about planning. We are sort of talking about money now, but we're talking about other things as well. My son, for not working as a carpenter one, commuted from Canterbury to London for a little while. I wouldn't have asked him to help fix something at that point, because he was on a train at crack of goodness knows what, and not home until really late. And by that time, he was exhausted. But when we're thinking about what we give to God, and we can plan it, we might decide in terms of our time that we can miss that copy of The Archers, or that edition of The Archers, and do something for God. We might think about how we plan our money. We know what we're going to pay for our mortgage or our rent. We know what the insurance is going to be. We know what we spend money on in most aspects of our life. Is God in there? Do we know what we're going to give to God? Have we planned for it? Or do we just think about it on the way to church on a Sunday morning? The next one is proportion. And I know that we've all heard about tithing. I know some of our churches will say that everybody here tithes. Everybody starts with 10% and works their way up. And then I look at their accounts and think, nah, I don't. But that's besides the point. If we think about giving as a proportion of our income, it's a really useful way to decide what we want to give to God. We have that biblical standard of tithing. But I'm not here today to tell anybody what they should give. What I would like everyone to think about and to work out is, what do you give now as a percentage of your income? And I don't mean as once you've paid for absolutely everything and your housing and your food and you know, the little bit that's left at the end. What do you give as a percentage of your income after tax, but before anything else? I know that when I started this job, and I thought I was being really generous, I did that sum. It was 1.5%, which wasn't very much. I've made it all up since. And I couldn't do it immediately. I couldn't do the jump from there to there straight away. So I did a bit, and then I did a bit more, and then I did a bit more. I'm not telling you what to give. I'm really not. But this church, this congregation, sure could use the money. And it's really good to think about what God wants of us. How much? It's got to be sustainable. It can't be more than we can afford, or you won't be able to keep it up. But it also, I think it should be regular. And I know that you have a gift day here. Do you participate in the gift day that they do up the other end? And that's great, but it's not regular. Now, my dad was a farmer. Father's Day is a good time to talk about dads. He died when I was 18, many, many years ago. But the thing about being a farmer, and this is in Australia, that your income is really erratic. You'd sell a bunch of cattle, and you'd have a whole lot of money come in. And my dad was pretty good with managing his money. But not all the farmers were. They'd get this big check come in, and they'd go off and they'd buy a new car. And then they'd struggle. And it could be erratic. When Britain joined the European Union, a bit topical here, suddenly, at one fell swoop, they stopped buying cattle from Australia. And the price dropped to the point where if a beast got sick, it was shot because it was worth less than the cost of a visit from the vet. But in planning, and he was able to be all right, but other people weren't. My point in this, though, is gift days are great. That sudden influx of income is great. But for the cash flow, it's awful. I can remember Dad saying something once about people who are on salaries, and they know what's coming in every month. They can budget every month. It makes it much easier. So how much? It's got to be sustainable, but not more than you can afford. But regular. If you haven't got a standing order, please consider really, really carefully setting one up. Because then you know what's going out every month. You don't have to think about it. But it's the single thing that you can do to ensure financial stability in this church. And once it goes, you don't even notice it. How much? I think it should be significant. I think you ought to be able to say, like I can, oh, now if I didn't give that money to the church, I could do X, Y, or Z. But actually, I choose to give to God. But there it is in red at the moment, at the bottom again. What each one of us gives to God is between us and God. It's not my business, it's not the vicar's business, it's not the person at the next table's business. What we give is between us and God. And another thing to think about. I know that whenever I stand up in front of a church family or a congregation, I will be talking to some people who are really struggling, who really can't give any more, who should probably be giving less. But there will also be people who are really comfortable and could easily give a bit more. Think about going to a coffee shop and having a cup of coffee with a friend. And you sit down at the table and the atmosphere is lovely and you're really looking forward to a conversation. And the person that you're with says, oh, it's all right, I'm not really in the mood for a coffee. And you go, ah, you realise suddenly that they're saying they don't want coffee, but actually they can't afford it. Are you going to sit and drink a cup of coffee in front of them? Or are you going to say, oh, it's all right, I'll get it this time? Because sometime in the future, it might be you that is in trouble. And you'll appreciate it when somebody chips in for you. So the next step, I'm going to ask everybody, please, to review your financial giving. And while you're at it, think about what gifts and skills you've got. And are you actually using them for the glory of God here in this place, for the mission of His church? Think about this planned giving. If you haven't got a standing order, or if you set one up ages ago and haven't thought about it since, think about that. And the last one on my list is gift aid. Now, I suspect this isn't going to affect anybody, because in the Church of England, we are very, very, very good at collecting up gift aid. It's something like £1.5 million every year comes from the taxman directly into our parishes. If you pay tax in the UK, sign that declaration, and it's free money. And I think we all think that's a good thing. So there's going to be an envelope for everybody. Can't see them at the moment, but I'm sure they're here somewhere. Everybody will get an envelope, and inside that envelope, there's a little brochure summarising what I've said this morning. There's a response form, there's a gift aid declaration and a standing order form. You can either set up a standing order online, or you can fill in the standing order form while you're thinking about it, and somebody else will sort it for you. We are asking everybody, please, to fill out these forms, whether you change what you give or not. Now, normally, we say 3-4 weeks, get them in. But Phil, being Phil, knows what you're like, and he says, you've got to all bring them back next week. That's all right, isn't it?
It's the rose service, that's all.
Yeah. That's all right. They will get their forms.
You'll never get them all in next week.
we can only have faith. We won't get them all in. But last year it took us about 3 months to get them all in. But if we set a deadline, then people are more likely to respond.
Yes, because you know what it's like. When my kids were at school, I was absolutely terrible. The form would come home from school, and it had to be signed. And I'd go, oh, yep, I'll do that in a minute, and it would go on the bench in the kitchen. And then another piece of paper would come along on top of it. Then the takeaway menu would go on top of it, till the time came when the kids are tugging at you and saying, could you please sign the form, otherwise I won't be able to go on the trip. We're all like that, which is why we're going to sort of say, bring it back, please, even if you're not changing. So that's really it. That's what a stewardship talk is about. It's about God. It's about God's generosity to us. It's about how we can help God in this place to spread His word. And I'm going to come back to a really old-fashioned hymn. It's an Easter hymn, so really appropriate now that Easter's finished. It's When I Survey the Wondrous Cross, it's called. And these words, I think, sum up what stewardship is, as opposed to fundraising, really well. And it goes, were the whole realm of nature mine, that were an offering far too small. Because love, so amazing, so divine, demands my life, my soul, my all. You know, if I owned everything. God is so wonderful, so big, so great. You know, if I gave it all to Him, it still wouldn't be enough. And that's that. And thank you very much.